guys, welcome to APD Comics Podcast, and we are on episode 13, a show every week in 2019. I'm David Brooke, your co-host, and with me is...
Hello, I am Forrest with two R's, and I'm more a machine now than man.
Wow, why would that be?
I had surgery.
Holy
on my kidneys. On my kidneys. My kid's knees.
Oh my god, are your kid's knees okay now?
They're fine now, but everyone should stay hydrated.
Yes, stay hydrated, especially when you're listening to the show, because we're bringing the hot news, the hot opinions, the hot segments that are going to make you sweat. They're going to make you need more hydration. And starting with every show, we talk about the news, the comic book news that everybody is talking about.
The hottest news.
Yeah. Oh, baby, it is scorching. It's sun level heat this week because Marvel, for 2 weeks straight, has been teasing us with these in-comic ads, taking up a full page. And a week ago, they let slip, I don't know, is that the right way to say it? Let slip. They let us know that Hickman would be writing a story in July 2019. And everyone lost their minds, for better or worse. And on Saturday at C2E2, at the Marvel's Next Big Thing panel, which is... really the best panel from Marvel at every con when they do have it, because they do let slip, or not let slip. Again, it's not a secret.
They just throw it out there.
Yeah.
100-degree heat news. Hot.
Right on your buttocks. And
yep. My buns are hot.
We got hot buns up in here. And this at C2E2, they let everybody know that Hickman is going to be writing 2 6-issue arcs, one called House of X and the other Powers of X, or is it Powers of 10?
So that's the word, is that they look the same, House of X and Powers of X, but are pronounced differently, which is the most Hickman shit I can think of.
Extra credit for pronunciation,
off the top of my
folks.
Head. Yeah.
they also released the cover to House of X and the cover for Powers of X. Drawn by Mark Brooks, who is freaking amazing, by the way. If you
yes.
if you go to aaptcomics.com, you can see it's basically a double page spread of a ton of heroes and villains from the X-Men universe, all sort of sitting in a garden, I guess. There's like flowers at the bottom. Kind of weird. Obviously, they shouldn't all be standing around. Magneto is particularly interesting. He's standing behind Xavier and Jean Grey, looking off to the side as if he's with them, but sort of, I don't know, thinking about moving on. I don't know. We don't have very many details about this besides the artist. Pepper Larraz is going to be House of X. Arby Silva is going to be on Powers of X.
Yep. And you can see now why those artists only did a couple of issues of Uncanny X disassembled each. And that would be because most likely they started working on this.
Right. And this is going to be weekly, correct? In July?
Yep.
Starting in July?
Weekly. 6 issues each for a total of 12 issues.
Marvel knows how to market stuff, let me tell you. I mean, I don't think people would be talking about this as much if they didn't do these full-page ads the last 2 weeks. Would you agree with that, Forrest, or maybe not?
Yeah, I think that's fair. They piqued my interest. I definitely saw the Twitter sphere blow up. It was hot.
Oh, yeah.
It was real hot. Yeah, you know, it's cryptic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was just like when two species fight for dominance or whatever. One will either adapt or die, or something like that. And then the next one was like Hickman, July 2019. That's good. That's cool. You know, it's cryptic. It's weird. I don't know that the average comics consumer reads a book and is like, oh, this is definitely going to be revealed at C2E2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the same way that people in the industry, writers, reviewers, comics podcast co-hosts do, you know, like we all in our Slack channel for work, we're like, oh, okay, they're gonna announce it at C2E2,
right?
We know right off the gate. So it works for us. It works really, really well for us. And I was like, oh, this is awesome, this is hot. But I'm not so sure that it necessarily worked as well for the average reader. And I actually would be curious if they just found it kind of frustrating.
Right. I mean, the average reader might not even know who Jonathan Hickman is, right? I mean, he hasn't been writing superhero comics for Marvel for years now.
A long time, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, C.B. Cebulski said, these new stories will redefine the X-Men and their place in the Marvel Universe. They always say that, though. I mean,
yeah.
John P. Q. could be writing this and he'd say, the X-Men are redefined. Everything's different.
Yeah, this is the definitive X-Men story.
I know some people are a bit upset because they've really liked what Rosenberg, Brisson, and Kelly Thompson's done, and they've sort of reset things with Age of X-Men. You know, Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson sort of headlining that. I don't get the impression this is going to be a reboot or anything like that. It's probably just the next chapter in the story, is that what my take is.
Hickman writes in a way where something leads to something leads to something,
mm-hmm.
right? All of his stuff is very anticipatory. It's very foundational, and then it gets theoretical, and then it gets even bigger than the universe, and I have some beef with that. But I can't imagine that he has the capacity nor the interest to be writing the full breadth of the X-books. There are a lot of X-books that come out every month. I think only second or as many as Spider-Man books come out each month. I wouldn't imagine that they're just going to dump Rosenberg and Thompson and Brisson and everybody off at the curb.
No way.
I think Rosenberg's Uncanny X-Men book is wildly successful, wildly popular. My concern is that Hickman's ideas are going to take credence over their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little bit of beef with them saying that they've been planning this for a year, and we'll talk about that later. But my concern is that they've told everyone to kind of pump the brakes until you get those Hickman scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're going to totally throw out these writers, because I don't think that they will do that.
I mean, let's be honest. With Age of X-Men wrapping up probably in July, the same month.
Yeah, or it's supposed to end in July.
Obviously, the whole X-Men universe right now is probably going to be in a flux where everything can move in a new direction anyway.
Yeah. You know, they kind of blew their load a little bit with having Xavier on the cover.
Right.
It kind of makes me a little like, well, I kind of know what's happening now. But at the same time, I think people might be interested in that. They might be interested in getting a little bit of insight into what the next step is. So I can see it split either way.
No one's talking about the fact that Havoc is like 5 years old on the cover. Anyone notice that?
I didn't.
He's standing behind Nightcrawler, who looks like he's in ninja mode with a bandana. That's the weirdest thing about this cover to me. It's the only character I'm like, wait, why is he only like 8 years old?
Well, they have snapshots of a lot of the characters in different times and different costumes, but I don't know, Baby Havoc.
Well, yeah, isn't there some talk that maybe this is a time travel story?
Oh, yeah, there has been. I hadn't even considered that or combined it with the Havoc. Right.
That's July. I'm very excited. I mean, I want to read it like everyone else. I think even people who may not like Hickman, I think they're going to be reading this. Maybe hate reading it, but I with every series, every event, I'm hopeful that it'll be pulled off and be done well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm going to read it regardless of my misgivings about how they've planned it out or how they've announced it.
A book I know you will definitely be reading, which was just announced, is Absolute Carnage.
Yeah. Yes!
Which comes out 1 month later in August 2019 by a guy named, what's the writer's name? Donnie something? Donnie?
Ronald Coates?
Ronald McDonald Cates, I think. And yeah, Ryan McDonald Stegman is going to be drawing it.
Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So a lot has been building up to this, obviously, since Carnage has been popping in and out of stories. Hasn't been a huge factor yet. It's mostly been about Venom, when it's Venom and Null, this god-like symbiote guy. And it looks like Carnage is going to be reigning supreme in August.
Yes.
That's two events back to back. I don't know if we can call Hickman what Hickman's doing in an event.
I think it is. It's an event miniseries. They gave us the exact number of issues that it's going to be. It encompasses what seems to be the entire X-Men history or cast of characters. It's just infinitely less interesting than anything to do with Cletus Cassidy.
Yeah.
And written by Donnie Cates with art by Ryan Stegman. I'm sold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did a little bit of a trailer, Marvel did, a YouTube video or Twitter video, where Donnie was like, here's the plot. Carnage is trying to hunt down and kill anyone that's ever worn a symbiote. That's all I need, baby.
Oh my God, dude, this is Carnage Highlander. He can be the only one.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to appease his god, Null. Null is God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so fucking sold on that, dude. I don't need anything else. I don't even want to hear about it or see it until it comes out, to be honest.
Okay, well, I think they're selling cryogenic sleeper beds.
Yo, hook me up with that shit that I know Walt Disney's frozen in.
Exactly, yeah. They might have to take just your head. Is that okay?
That's fine. I can read with that.
Also, Frank Martin, the colorist, is joining Stegman again for this, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
He works really well with Stegman, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. The cover is amazing. It's such a good depth to all those reds. You know, it's Carnage in all his red glory, standing on top of a graveyard with, like, Logan and Eddie Brock and Captain America and Spider-Man and stuff on the tombstones. All people that have worn symbiotes, by the way. And it's so, like, you could say it's a little 90s Hot Topic, but it's done so in a way that is like, this is a Carnage story.
Mm-hmm.
These artists are going to lean hard into that Carnage shit. It is absolute Carnage. I just like that. They're not pulling their punches. Maybe it's a little cheesy. Maybe it's a little over-the-top heavy metal. So what?
It's definitely like a Maximum Carnage nostalgic vibe, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And the it starts with the free Comic Book Day issue that Donnie and Ryan are releasing. And the cover for that is a direct callback to the cover for Maximum Carnage.
Right. That was 90s galore goodness.
Yeah, I love Maximum Carnage. I know some people have some misgivings about it, but I really like it a lot.
You know, the pinwheel on Carnage's forehead on the Absolute Carnage art, I don't know why, but it makes me think of, like, Charles Manson.
Yeah, there's definitely a weird culty, cult of personality, cult of godhood, cult of murder angle happening.
Mm-hmm.
They've been teasing that out in the Venom story a little bit. I'm definitely excited to see where it's going. And I'm a little disappointed that Ryan is stepping off of Venom. They haven't announced the artist that's going to be following him. But he's going to be working on Absolute Carnage full time, at least through the series, the miniseries, the event, whatever you want to call it. And I equally as excited for that as I am disappointed that he's leaving Venom. So either way, it's a wash for me. It's a win for me. It's hot.
Well, we know he's going to be back. He's already said he'll be back after all this, so that's good.
Right. Yep.
You know, do we know how long this is going to be going for? Like, is it going to go into, like, November?
They haven't said. It just starts in August.
Yeah, because Marvel also revealed they have another event planned. Now, obviously, I like events when they're only, like, a month long. This year, War of the Realms is taking up, like, over 100 books all the way through April. It's a lot. Whereas House of X, Power of X, that's only 12 issues. Absolute Carnage is probably smaller. Marvel's already starting to hype this December 2019 event that they'll probably reveal at San Diego Comic-Con in July, I would guess. If they were to reveal it at any moment. Or maybe New York Comic-Con, who knows. Any guesses what this December event might be, Forrest?
I was thinking about the things that are left, because we have a big Thor event, we have a big Carnage / Spider-Man / Venom event, we have a big X-Men event. It seems to me that it either has to be Avengers or Fantastic Four.
That makes sense.
I can't imagine that they're going to go Guardians, maybe. But it seems to me that it'll probably be Avengers or Fantastic Four, and my anticipation is that it will not be an entire line encompassing event like War of the Realms is.
Right. And the next Marvel Studios movie isn't till May. So it's not like it has to coincide with that, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have time to set up whatever they want.
One might assume Absolute Carnage is coming out when it is because of the new Spider-Man movie in July. Maybe trying to spin off that a little bit or get fans in the comic shops.
Yeah.
Even though it's not, like, directly a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, but it comes out right near Far From Home, and it's one of the greatest Spider-Man villains of all time, I think. So
sure.
Yeah, works for me.
Anyway, that's it for Marvel news. A lot of Marvel news. And they have a pretty impressive year. I'm excited to see how it all spins out. Now, other publishers are doing stuff too, obviously.
Sometimes.
Not always. Dynamite Entertainment has revealed they're doing an Altered Carbon comic, which is in line with the publisher, considering a lot of their books are...
Franchise?
There you go.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of the show, so maybe I shouldn't be delivering this news.
I did not finish it.
Same. And then I power watched the last three because I just couldn't. The concept's interesting. It's about this futuristic world where you can basically clone yourself forever, even though it's illegal, and put your soul into a new body. Any body, in fact, not even your clone body. The concept is rife for comic books. I mean, it's got this Blade Runner-y, colorful, futuristic world with lots of different weirdness going on. And I don't know. It could be cool. That is going to be interesting because it's kind of coming out around when the Blade Runner comic is coming out, Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Cyberpunk is back in a big way.
Yeah, yeah. Even in gaming, too.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's another book that was revealed. Some sales news for you. Batman Who Laughs was the only comic to top 100,000 in February 2019. The sales numbers came out for February, and they're not looking so hot.
No, they're not. They're really not. I thought it was a good month, looking back at the reviews. I saw that, and I went back and I looked at the reviews on AIPTComics.com, as well as on ComicBookRoundup.com, and I was like, man, this is a good month for comics.
Mm-hmm.
You got Age of X-Men, you got Venom, you've got a bunch of different Batman books that I think people are really into, really good Justice League.
Yep.
What's going on? People aren't buying them.
Yeah, I mean, sales always go down after Christmas, we know this, but they're down 382,000 units from last year at the same time, which is not a small number.
Yeah.
I don't know, this feels so cyclical when people talk about comic sales, because they always seem to go down and then they're up, but no one really talks about when they go up. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Or they talk about this one book doing incredibly well.
Right.
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 And then talking about how that book is getting optioned for TV or for a movie or for spinoffs or whatever. When other books might be doing just a couple thousand units less,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's a little arbitrary, a little banal. But it's interesting in that from a reviewer's perspective, from an industry perspective, this is one of the better times for comics that I can recall in the past couple of years, but the sales wouldn't indicate that.
Right. So what's going on?
I don't know. I couldn't speak to it. Obviously, I'm buying all the books that I would normally buy, and I think you are as well. I think plenty of people that I talk to are. I would imagine that people have a little bit of event burnout,
mm-hmm.
and that's maybe part of it. I don't think that that's all of it. I don't know.
If we look at the two top comics from Marvel and DC, Venom number 11 with 84,000, Batman Who Laughs number 3 with 101,000, I think both are doing something similar in that they're giving us something that feels new, exciting, mm-hmm. Cutting edge even, dark would be a way to describe both books.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe it's fatigue because there's too many colorful superhero books with no, you know what it is, the superheroes are smiling too much. When you wipe that smile off your face, Captain America.
yeah, neither of those books are event-based either. You can make a slight argument for Batman Who Laughs, but I think Snyder is gonna pull sales no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is, but it does make me a little sad. I wish that people were engaging in the hobby.
Yeah,
In the way that I am.
You know, when it comes to sales, it's getting harder, I feel like, to track sales because we're reading books in different ways. Like, those units numbers, maybe they're down because digital numbers are up. I mean,
sure,
there's ways to figure these things out, but like, I don't know, to compare it to TV, you know, the Nielsen score, where they have people with literal boxes in their houses watching what they watch and then going, oh, this is the most popular show, isn't necessarily the case because people can stream stuff now the next day on Hulu.
Yeah.
This leads to our next bit of news, which is that Nintendo Switch has a new comic reading service. Is that going to be counted in sales? Right now, it's a free comics service, so it's obviously trying to sort of pull in new readers. Probably they're thinking younger readers, since it's the Nintendo Switch, who will then, in the future, buy comics. But it's just another way to read a comic book and to not know how many folks are actually reading it. Besides the, I'm sure the publishers have numbers on these things, they just don't want to share it.
I think it's changing. I think the way that we talk about sales, the way we talk about rentals, the way we talk about streaming, the way we talk about anything really related to an inherently print medium is going to change or needs to change. I don't know that the industry is keeping up in the same ways that Hulu and Netflix and all those other businesses are. Comixology, you can make an argument for Marvel Unlimited, DC. They have those, but they don't speak about them to the same degree. I think that that's going to start shifting over the next couple of years. But what I can say definitively is that just because this is happening, sales are decreasing, and they'll probably go up again in the summer or something, just so you know, doesn't mean that when C.B. Cebulski and Joe Quesada and stuff host a panel that they're going to announce that all print comics are canceled.
Oh, my God. That happened a couple weeks ago. It was hitting the interwebs. Oh, my God. Marvel's going under. Yeah.
Guess what? The scary goth Spider-Man book sold 84,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a small number. They're going to be fine.
Right. Especially with Disney backing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see how you could make a case for DC in that they have less of a backing, right? I mean, I guess Warner Brothers owns them, but they don't necessarily make, you know, Warner Brothers isn't going to just keep backing the horse that may not be pulling in the weight they want. I think I saw a creator, it was Brian Hitch, and he was saying a Captain America hat will actually make Marvel more money than the Captain America comic book.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
If you look at it at a corporate level, obviously the chairman of the board is going to be like, all right, let's push more hats, and I don't care about the comics so much. Whereas, you know, the fans, obviously, we're going to be in an uproar if they ever were to stop a comic forever. But, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, we're in a corporate, you know, capitalistic society. It's how things run.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so depressed. Do I even want to talk about good comics anymore?
I don't know. I do.
Oh, okay, cool. In our next segment, top books of last week, we talk about our two favorite comics that came out last week. And to start this segment, we always talk about comicbookroundup.com's top two rated books with at least three reviews, because there's quite a few books out there that might only get a little love, but a 10 out of 10. And I don't really know if I should count that, because one opinion is not a full opinion, in my opinion. opinion.
Yeah. These opinions are hot.
Hot in the streets. Like in our first episode. Or was that the first episode?
Second.
Second episode.
But I've been hot since.
The number one book, number one rated book last week was Monstrous number 21 with a 9.8, folks. And that's written by Marjorie Liu and drawn by Sana Takeda.
Takeda, yeah.
This is a yet another one of those comics where everyone's like, holy crap, this is so good. And I'm like, cool. I'll read it someday, maybe when I'm old. I get the appeal. The covers are gorgeous. And obviously it's won so many awards. Everyone's talking about it. Have you dipped into this at all?
Here's what I'll say about Monstrous.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, the bookshelf that holds all of my trades collapsed in the middle of the night.
Oh my God, was anyone hurt?
No one was hurt. None, my trades are all fine too.
Thank God.
But I had to pick them all up. I had to put them all on my desk. I'll have to get a new bookcase. I saw the first two Monstrous trades that I bought, and I was like, I should really read those sometime.
Yeah.
So the intention is there, very much like you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing that these women creators have won some of the first ever Eisner Awards for women.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get around to it.
I think I can speak for you, Forrest, when I say we have so many books we're reading on a weekly basis because of serial storytelling from Marvel and DC, the big two. I think it takes a lot of our time. And I mean, that's not an excuse, but it's hard to get to those really great indies that everyone loves. Like, that's why I haven't gotten to Jeff Lemire's, help me out.
Black Hammer.
No. Image Comics. G-Word.
Gideon Falls.
There you go.
G-Word.
But I mean, that's my own fault. What is your second favorite book of last week?
My second favorite book of last week is Invisible Kingdom number 1, written by G. Willow Wilson with art by Christian Ward. I wrote an advance review for this. It's up on the site over at aaptcomics.com. It is a fantastic, dense, funny, serious, religious, philosophical sci-fi story. Grounded, elevated, really, really brought to life by Christian Ward's incredible watercolor-based art. G. Willow Wilson is telling a story that she described as a mix between Dune and Cowboy Bebop. And after reading it, I was like, yep, true. You nailed it.
Nice.
She's throwing her own ideas in there a little bit, too. She's telling a story about this kind of shadowy corporation that controls everything in the universe and its tenuous or maybe not so tenuous connections to the world's or the universe's largest religion. And a young adept or acolyte of the religion that finds out that those connections are there. Despite the fact that the religion is profiting off of the fact that they have nothing to do with that mega corporation. So there's a little bit of like corporate espionage going on. There's a little bit of like this big monumental sci-fi world building, like Blade Runner corporations, private corporatization and stuff like that. It's things that you might be used to in sci-fi. But there is also a really, really good like Taoism, Muslim, Hindu type religious aspect, talking about finding peace within the self and all this stuff that gets built up over the first issue to kind of be like, well, what if that's not true? Or what if you're being sold that idea? And I really like that. I really liked it quite a bit to take not the hard sci-fi elements only, but also the spiritual ones that we don't talk about as often. And to see that brought to life by someone that did things as amazing as Odyssey and Black Bolt, Christian Ward, so brightly colorful, such a rejection of like the dull browns and grays and gunmetal blues and blacks of other sci-fi worlds. You got like bubblegum pink, robin eggs blue, like all these bright, amazing, evocative candy colors, and just really, really fantastic watercolor-focused art in a world that feels very different from the norm. The plot is dense, but it is exciting as the art, and I was just really, really into it.
Nice. Yeah, and that's from Dark Horse Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Original series.
Yes, and I believe that in a rare case for Dark Horse, G. Willow Wilson and Christian Ward own the rights to the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is a creator-owned book from Dark Horse.
I got to talk to Wilson at San Diego Comic-Con. Actually, there's a video interview of me asking her questions about this series, and I was hyped up for it. I'm tentatively waiting number two to get a better understanding of where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I make no promises that it isn't challenging. There's a lot of made up words. There's a lot of made up ideas and stuff like that. But I think if you have the time to dig into that, or even if it gets contextualized in the second issue, like you're saying, I think it'll probably be worthwhile.
I feel like the people who like Dune, this like very rich world that takes a little bit of effort to really enjoy, are going to love it.
Yep. Me.
I present Forrest, number one candidate. My number two pick for last week was Meet the Skrulls number two by Robbie Thompson and Nico Henriksen. This is a really cool book, obviously, since this is my number two pick. Number one, I thought was good, but issue number two made me a believer. Like, I'm all in now. I was a little bit on the fence with a couple things. There's only one thing that kind of hit me the wrong way with number two, which I explain in detail in my review on aptcomics.com. The general premise of this book is great because it's about like domestic life, but you're a secret alien espionage spy that's trying to stop humans from being able to track Skrulls ever again. They're trying to stop this technology that humans are, I guess, close to developing. So what's interesting too to me is that they're not necessarily that evil. I mean, they act evil. They're manipulating people. Like the daughter is manipulating people in high school so that she can get secret plans or whatever. But they're not like trying to kill all of humanity or anything. So you can still sort of back them and you still support them even though they are doing, you know, secret things. It's sort of like the show Americans, but with aliens.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's why it succeeds, I think, because, you know, even with Americans, you like the characters. They're human. Or in this case, they're people. And you can relate to them. And I think Thompson's doing a fantastic job building the personalities of each character and the dynamics between them, more importantly. The father and the youngest daughter are possibly the more interesting characters because they are going through their own sort of internal hell. They're different hells of their own making. And it's because they've been put into a really hard position. And I think anyone can relate to that. We've all had moments where we feel like we're powerless or we can't do what we necessarily want because either our job or, you know, laws prevent us from getting what we really want to make us happy or what we think will make us happy. So, yeah, there's a really good character development angle to the story that I really like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Me too.
Geez, I wonder what your number one pick is, though. But you know what's funny is I actually started with the number one pick for Comic Book Roundup, and I should have started with the number two pick.
Whatevs.
Let's say this. Okay, so I spoiled it. But now the number two pick from ComicBookRoundup.com, according to ComicBookRoundup.com, was a 9.5 for Gretel number one, a Xenoscope comic book, which I am shocked about because I've reviewed my fair share of Xenoscope books years ago. I've kind of stopped because a lot of their books are very much gratuitous with the breasts and buttocks shots of women.
Yeah, I don't find that they're the best in terms of representing women or even minority characters in the way that they should be.
Right. Now, I mean, they've had talented people working there. I mean, Pat Shan, for instance, he's done a lot of pro-LGBTQ comics, and I think he has a good grip on writing. Obviously, he's writing like Marvel novels now, too. I don't think he really does Xenoscope anymore, though. This whole Xenoscope universe is basically taking free-to-use fairy tales and putting like a superhero twist on them with lots of cleavage.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Because I'm talking about Gretel number one right now and saw how high the score was, and it's from reputable websites like Graphic Policy, I might have to check this out simply because, I mean, they have had their moments where they've done good stuff. It's just that so much of it is marred in these insane Playboy-style covers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I saw the title and I was like, Gretel?
Yeah.
Like Hans and Gretel?
Yeah.
And then I read the hook and I was like, you know, that actually sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. What's your number one pick?
My number one pick is Meet the Skrulls number two, written by Robbie Thompson with art by Nico Henricon. You pretty much touched on all of the reasons that I liked it, so I'm not going to spend too much time bloviating about it. I do want to read a segment that I actually tweeted out from the book, where the father is pretty disappointed, as you alluded to, in the youngest daughter. And he says, "On my best days, I wonder if being on this wretched planet has warped your mind. But on most days, I simply wonder if you're even a Skrull at all."
Ooh.
And they kind of cut to her, like, tearing up. I rarely feel that strong emotional connection to villain characters in that way. The characterization here is very good. It's very evocative. It's very emotional. It's very surprising. There's a good central mystery here, and that's fine. But the characterization, especially of people that we – or aliens that we should detest or are expected to detest in, given the context of the rest of the Marvel Universe, is so well done. It's another like slice of life story in the same way that like Tom King's The Vision was, but it's less what is it like to try and hide away and only live a domestic life like The Vision was, and more what is it like to feel entirely trapped by a domestic life. And what can you do to get out of it? And what kind of hatred does that breed within a family? The microaggressions and stuff like that. And I really, really like it. It's really well done.
It coincides with the Captain Marvel movie in a way, too, since... Oh, shoot. Did I just spoil something?
No.
But how the Skrulls are depicted in the film coincides with this in some way. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
My number one pick was Justice League number 20 by Scott Snyder and Jorge Jimenez with art by Jorge Jimenez. I really like this issue because it really delves into the characters. We see basically their happy ending, their heaven, how they want life to be. But underneath it all, something is wrong, because it's whenever everything is going great, it's probably not. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. And there is a mystery afoot. We don't know what's really going on yet, but it's very unnerving and well done in that way. I compared it to Lynch, David Lynch's kind of work. I keep doing that lately because of Age of X-Men. It has a similar vibe. This issue actually has a similar vibe to almost all of Age of X-Men in that everything's hunky-dory. The heroes are like, huh, this is great. But we see these basically visions of a better life, and it shouldn't be so happy. That includes Jaro, which is Batman has taken Jaro under his wing. Jaro is like Starro, but he's a baby version. And Jaro calls Batman dad. And there's a fantastic moment where we see Jaro fighting crime in his own starfish-style Robin costume. And I think the internet went abuzz with that. It was...
Yeah, I saw lots of screenshots.
It's a fun moment. And, you know, after talking to Scott Snyder 2 weeks ago on this podcast, clearly he's having a lot of fun, and we're going to have fun too. And so this issue does a good job of balancing that fun, but also getting kind of deep into character and exploring those characters and their deepest desires, which, of course, is all got this shadowy undercurrent. So, yeah. It's well written, and I can't wait for 21, where we start to get some answers, and maybe the heroes aren't so happy about being toyed with emotionally.
What a twist.
What a twist. In a big twist of the show, we're going to go to our next segment. Ah, wait, did you see that coming? Shoot.
No, I was blown away.
This is one of our favorite segments. It's called Square Up, where we take two big heroes or villains from the big two, DC and Marvel, and have them do a super fight, but with a selected scenario, thanks to the game Super Fight?
Yes, I have the yellow deck from Super Fight, the challenge deck.
Yes.
Not a sponsor, but if you're looking.
All right, so I'm going to randomly generate a DC character.
I will randomly generate a Marvel character.
All right. Who'd you get?
I'm pulling it up right now. Okay. Star-Lord.
Star-Lord. Wow. I got Poison Ivy.
Oh, interesting. All right. I'm going to pull a challenge from the yellow deck here.
Ooh.
All right. Ooh. All right. Hottest pop star.
Oh, my God. Wow. What a card you just pulled.
Very different approaches for them, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What's fascinating about that card is Star-Lord's got quite a soundtrack.
Yeah.
Not even just in the movies, but in the comics, too. There was that fantastic comic where the whole thing was wrapped around a tape he was listening to, I think. It was a one-shot. I can't remember what it was exactly. But, yeah, and then Poison Ivy, obviously, she's got the bomb costumes.
Oh, man, the aesthetic. Yeah. Queen.
Yeah. She would be, like, a pop star, for sure. She could pull it off.
Oh, absolutely. She'd be great. She's got that real crazy big aesthetic, Lady Gaga-esque.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everyone would be like, I don't understand it, but I do like it.
She wouldn't wear a meat suit, though. She would. Well, maybe she would as a sign
you
of...
You know, I think, yeah.
She could.
I wouldn't throw it.
Now, what was the card again? Say it again. Who would be better?
Hottest. Pop star.
Okay, so it's not even about music. It's about sexiness.
I mean, we could talk about sexiness. We could talk about who would top the hot charts. Who's got the number one single and who looks good doing it?
Yeah.
I think Star-Lord wouldn't lean into the, like, Justin Bieber type stuff.
God, no.
No.
He'd be more like Bruce Springsteen, wouldn't he? He'd be, like, tough.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, too. And I don't think that there's many... There's not a whole lot of solo acts that pull that off, are there?
I mean, Bruce Springsteen, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's not really a solo act. He has a band.
Right.
Yeah.
I just can't. I do think that Star-Lord would fall into Creed territory a lot sooner than I would want him to.
What territory?
Creed.
What do you mean, Creed?
The band.
Oh, Jesus God.
Yeah.
And when I say Jesus God, I mean it literally.
But when you see when you see Creed, or when you hear Creed, and then when you look at Peter Quill,
mm-hmm.
There's some DNA there.
Mm-hmm. See, Star-Lord is a bit rough around the edges, isn't he? He's not really concerned about his hair or his look.
Right. And that's, I think that's where I'm getting the kind of country rock.
Right. Right.
Thing from. Poison Ivy, however.
Yeah, she's kind of evil, right? So wouldn't her music kind of have like a evil tint to it?
Yeah, hell yeah. And I'm super into
Oh my God.
Fucking kidding me?
Do you remember that band Evanescence?
Evanescence?
Evanescence. Yeah.
Yes, I do remember Evanescence. I listen to Evanescence all the time.
Oh, really? I feel like she'd have that sound.
Because
it's like screaming.
I'm into that.
Like, not screaming, but you know what I mean? Like a passionate kind of like rage. Not rage. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got you. Mm-hmm. I do think Harley would feature on some songs.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I don't know who Star-Lord's going to pull.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. I mean,
maybe he's got a couple tracks like with Groot on drums or something, but you can't really have Groot on vocals.
All right, I have a crazy idea. What if Star-Lord was a pop singer but for kids like Raffi, and he had Rocket as the cute sidekick and also Groot as his cute sidekick, and they had this trio band, and maybe they were featured in a couple episodes of Barney, I don't know, and the kids just love him. He has this nice, I mean, he obviously needs to shave more to, you know, sing to children.
Yeah, he's got to stop drinking.
I don't know. Maybe he could pull it off. Who knows?
Chris Pratt played Johnny Karate on Parks and Rec.
That's true.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah, all right, he could do that. He's got that look. He's got that vibe. Seems approachable.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Star-Lord seems approachable.
If I had to pick a winner, I would say Poison Ivy, though.
Yeah, I Poison Ivy fucking slays.
Oh, for sure.
Peter would do really well in a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's... I honestly think it would be Christian rock.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Or like weird grunge rock that some people are really into,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't get any bigger than that.
Right.
Poison Ivy would blow us away.
I think she could pull off anything. Like she could. Oh, she just could like Gaga. She could pull out a guitar.
Right.
Solo.
She's got those acoustic songs. She starred in A Star Is Born. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember Lady Gaga. She's a queen.
She is. And she could write some killer Batman songs, too, about how much he sucks.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it would be tricky for her to go on tour since she kind of hates humanity. So would she just do shows in, like, the Amazon rainforest alone?
Oh, my God. That's so artistic. Yes.
Everyone would love her, even though, like, her songs are about, like, how, like, the human race should be cut in half. And
yeah. Yeah. Everyone misunderstood genius.
Exactly. She has the perfect personality for a rock or pop star.
Her and Harley could do songs about how much they hate men. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be good. All right, guys. In our next segment, we talk about the top number one book we're looking forward to that comes out next week. And by next week, I mean just 2 days from now on Wednesday. And I'm going to go first. Is that okay? Can I go first?
Hit it.
All right. It's kind of a big deal. It's a milestone issue from DC Comics called Detective Comics number 1000. And it's my most anticipated book, in part because I've already read it. And I already know it's pretty damn good. It has a ton of talent. Tom King, Scott Snyder, Kevin Smith. Hello. Brian Michael Bendis, Warren Ellis, Jeff Johns, Peter J. Tomasi, James Tynion. It goes on and on. Artists are Greg Capullo, Becky Cloonan, Jim Lee. I mean, it's another historic issue that I think DC is taking a very serious approach to, just like they did with Action Comics about a year ago, number 1000. And it's an anthology book, which I'm a sucker for because I do like a short but a complete story in a comic book format. It's 96 pages. It has about, I think, 10 stories in total. And I'm going to say about three of them are 10 out of 10 perfect stories. I don't want to name names, but Bendis is one, Snyder is one, and I'm not going to say anything else. But there's a lot to enjoy here. It is a more expensive book, though. It's a $10 book. So it's going to be quite a bit on a lot of people's wallets, but, you know, how often does 1,000 issues come out? Not often. This is only the second time in history, I think, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So I am actually giving it a 9 out of 10 for AAPTComics.com. You can read my review on Wednesday when that goes live. But yeah, I can't wait till Spider-Man reaches 1,000 because they're going to, hopefully they kind of mimic what DC's doing. I want to see like 25 different creators, people that may not always do Spider-Man, come out of the woodwork and just give us something cool. That's all these stories are 5 to 10 pages. I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, that's my pick.
Yeah. No, it sounds awesome. I'm really into it. I really love Warren Ellis. I really love Becky Cloonan. The idea of having them both on a story together blows me away. So I'm excited for that one at the very least.
For sure.
My pick is Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt number 3, written by Kieran Gillen with art by Kaspar Wiegengaard. I'm going to own up to this. When we talked about Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt number 2 a couple weeks ago, I dumped on it a little bit. I didn't like it. I had a lot of beef with it. It was a little in your face. It had big ideas. It had some twists that I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it.
Wow.
And I'm pretty interested in where they're going. I couldn't tell you whether or not it's a love read or if it's a hate read, but it is evoking emotions. It's evoking surprise, interest, eagerness in a way that not a lot of comics do for me. I'm really interested in where it's going. I really want to see how they're going to play with tropes and genres and all that stuff. I don't think it always pulls it off, but I think a lot of the time Kieran has one really, really good idea in that issue that I'm like, that's fucking awesome. I have not seen anyone else do that or do it that well. It's worth my time to read a comic that does that, even if it's once per issue. And I think Peter Cannon Thunderbolt is that comic right now. Especially with Wicked and Divine ending, especially with Die just kind of maintaining a course here for a little bit. Peter Cannon is Kieran Gillen's experimental one, and that is rad. I'm excited to read it, and I'm very excited for our reviewer Ritesh Babu to write a mini essay review, as he's been doing, that explains to me what is going on.
Yeah, he does some really in-depth, like 2,000-word reviews on that.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. I'm a smart guy. I got a master's degree, y'all. Ritesh's reviews make me like, did I read the comic?
You know, of all the comics hitting the shelf next week, that one deserves a 2,000-word essay, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. And that's very exciting.
It's a comic book for comic book readers, too. I think anyone can jump in and enjoy it, but there's like layers there that only comic book readers, longtime ones, will really get.
Yep.
Well, I'm excited for that, too, just so you know. Hey, me too. In our next segment, we talk about our favorite cover art of coming out next week, Judging by the Cover Junior, I like to call it, where we highlight really good art. And there are a lot of good covers out next week, especially since Detective Comics number 1000 has something like 15 variant covers.
I couldn't pick one.
There's so many. What was your favorite cover though?
My favorite cover was William Gibson's Alien 3, number 5. So this is, I know there's a couple of Alien books coming out right now from Dark Horse. This is the adaptation of William Gibson, the author of Neuromancer's original script for Alien 3, the movie. The other author on the book, Johnny Christmas, also did the cover art for this, and it is awesome. It is a all black cover with a woman floating in darkness and a xenomorph meeting her eyes, kind of staring her down. It really highlights the difference between humankind and aliens. And it really highlights, like, she looks cool. She looks tough. She's got, like, she's pretty ripped. She's got a stern face. The alien looks immensely more terrifying, strong. It's got, like, spines coming out of its back and veins and, like, this kind of liquid lifting off out of its head. And it's just, like, snarling only a couple inches from her face. I think it's likely that the humans will probably win, but oh my God. God, at what cost when you're fighting an enemy like this? And I think that Johnny Christmas really leans into that really well, leans into how just the physical difference between humans and aliens is so staggeringly broad and terrifying. and I like it alone for that.
Quick take. How do you feel about Disney owning the Alien property?
Very good.
That was quick.
Yeah. I hope that they start calling her a Disney princess.
Ooh, yeah, for sure.
They won't, but
yeah, you know,
I will.
Dark Horse has definitely done a really good job getting Alien and I think even Predator, not to mix the two, but cover artists for these. They're always very like dark and moody, and they evoke like horror and also that sci-fi like itch of like weirdness. I think that's
yep.
really good.
Mm-hmm. They feel very otherworldly. They feel very scary. Predator, Alien, and even Prometheus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Prometheus.
Yep.
My favorite cover out next week is for Detective Comics number 1 by Steve Rude. It looks like it's painted. It's a cover where Batman is on this fence. You can see this at aiptcomics.com, by the way, if you look at the post for this podcast. Batman is hunched kind of over on a fence about to attack these guys in the foreground who look almost like KKK members. They have white hoods. You can see this red tattoo on their arms, though, so they must be like cult folks. And one's got a torch. Another one's got this mace thing that he's going to beat a woman with who's got pearls flying up in the air. She's screaming. They're on the hood of a car. Batman's about to strike. And in the background behind Batman is this giant bat that evokes classic Batman covers. It's like a shadow in the night. And then there's the moon, there's lightning, there are bats flying and fluttering around. There's even a building in the background that almost looks like it could be Arkham, who knows? There's a lot of layers to this. I like a dynamic cover where there's background, foreground, you know, and then middle ground. Is it middle ground? It's just a lot to look
yeah.
at. And you can go,
sure.
Your eye just moves backwards to forwards. And then like you make a connection and there's a story there. And it actually evokes one of my favorite Batman covers ever, which was a Detective Comics cover. We actually used to do cover articles a lot at aiptcomics.com. And it's like another one where Batman's on a fence and there's leaves. I'll show it to you for us later. It's really good. Anyway, that's my cover. Check it out at aiptcomics.com. Anywho, we have our last segment, which is usually Soapbox. And this week it is Soapbox.
What a twist.
Last week it was Soapbox. I talked about Spider-Man life story a little bit and how I wanted more stories like that. It was a positive Soapbox.
Yeah.
This week, is it positive? Is it negative? Who knows? You decide, because Forrest is going to lay...
Oh, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, yeah. He's going to get up on that box. He's going to tell you what's up. And what's up, Forrest?
We got to talk about false platitudes about marketing. We got to talk about y'all telling me information that I don't need to get me excited about a comic book. We got to talk about you saying Jonathan Hickman has been planning House of X, Powers of 10, Powers of X, whatever, for a year. It tells me absolutely nothing. I don't care. So all the marketing around this House of X and Powers of 10 books, aside from the cool, admittedly cool things that they did with the full-page ads that we talked about at the top of the show, was Jonathan Hickman has been planning this X-Men event for a year. All of the other X-Men writers have been planning this X-Men event for a year. Okay, I know how long a year is. A calendar year? 365 days? What else does that tell me? Nothing. It's not an indication of quality. It's not an indication of the breadth of the content. It's not an indication of Hickman had a really good idea and he crafted it for a year. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. James Cameron has been working on the Avatar sequels for what feels to me like 100 years.
They're going
to
be so good, though, right?
They're going to be so good. They've been forged in this crucible, right? It means nothing. A passage of time. Y'all think George R.R. Martin's books are going to be really, really good when they come out? When Game of Thrones, the show that you all like, is going to be over before that next, if that next book ever comes out? It doesn't matter how long a thing has been planned for or how long it takes to come out, because it is not indicative of quality nor intent. It's not indicative of anything rather than foresight. And guess what? Marvel has dozens of events every year. I should fucking hope that they have a plan. I should fucking hope that they have a calendar.
That would be bad news if they didn't know what they were doing in 6 months.
Yeah. That would be bad news.
What if they framed it differently? What if they were like, we literally handcuffed Hickman to a table and said, write 12 issues and don't stop rewriting it for a year. You only have, you can only write these 12 issues and you have to keep writing even when you're done and rewriting. Would that change your mind?
It would be different. It would be interesting. It would actually cause me to look at my calendar and be like, that's actually a long time.
Yeah. Not to mention,
rather than what's happening now, which is just like me being like, oh yeah, I know how long a year is.
Not to mention, I mean, if they actually did that, someone should probably go to jail. That's illegal. You shouldn't kidnap people and make them write stories for a year.
It depends on how good it is.
Yeah. I mean, War of the Realms is a similar event that's coming out soon. I think Jason Aaron's been talking about how this has been something in the works, I think, even since the beginning. He started Thor about 7 years ago, 6 years ago now.
Yeah, 6 or 7 years ago, yeah.
I mean, he said that, you know, it's been on his mind. So, you know, he hasn't necessarily saying, like, he spent every minute thinking about it, but it's definitely been something in the cards, which is, I don't know, it's kind of nice to know that something was planned, but like you just said, duh.
Yeah.
Right.
I should fucking hope so.
I think one thing actually I said to you earlier before we started recording was how there are people already upset, like, oh, Matthew Rosenberg or whoever, Ed Brisson, who they really like right now writing X-Men, they're going to be fired and Hickman's going to take over. No one's saying that, first of all. But second of all, like, maybe they say, oh, you know, Hickman's been working on this for a year because so that it eases people's minds. Like, no, this was always part of the plan. We're not bringing Hickman in at the last minute because Rosenberg made us mad or whatever.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's fair. I get it. I get that you want to project confidence in a creator or in a storyline. I don't think that time is a good indication of that.
Yeah, some of my best reviews were written in 15 minutes.
All my reviews are written in 15 minutes now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. Writing and art is different from each other, too. Like, an artist can literally spend 6 days and it'll be better. A full page spread will be better because they put 6 days into it. I don't think a writer necessarily makes a better script because they had more time.
Nope. Absolutely not.
Man, you know what? I just took my pants off. That soapbox, man, was so hot. It was so hot. Don't worry, I have underwear on.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of our hot, hot, hot show. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you go over to Apple and you can like, you can review, you can give us a high score. I don't know, whatever you feel like.
Hey, y'all, there's a little share button on that podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I want you to do is click that share button. Copy and paste that link just about anywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Reddit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want you to send it to your grandmama.
Preach. Oh, yeah, and also subscribe if you haven't already.
Yeah, duh.
Thanks for listening, dudes.
I hope you subscribed a year ago. That's how long ago we planned this show.
We did. We planned this show a year ago. Somehow we knew that Hickman was going to be writing those books a year ago. I don't know why we didn't just start the shows.
I don't know why we didn't tell you a year ago.
Right, right. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Sunday.
See ya.
Bye.